Today's program was brought to you by Le Creuset, made in France since 1925. The first and finest enameled cast iron cookware and a favorite for generations. For more information, visit lecreuset.com. That's LECREUSET.com.
I'm Massimo Bottura.
Hi, this is Amanda Cohen.
This is David Kinch.
This is Mike Anthony.
This is Huni Kim.
This is Amanda Freitag.
This is Richard Blaze.
This is Paul Kahn.
This is Curtis Stone.
This is Stephen Harris.
This is Missy Robbins.
And you're listening to Andrew Talks to Chefs on Heritage Radio.
It was my intro into the hectic sort of dark life of a cook and a chef, and I really lashed touch on it really quick.
What drew you to it?
The pace, mm-hmm. the excitement, the creativity, being pushed and mm-hmm. yelled at and made to work faster and harder and think on a different level and have a criminal amount of fun.
That is Chef David DeBerry of the Cookery and the Parlor Restaurants, our guest today on Andrew Talks to Chefs. It's gonna take a Hi, everybody. Welcome to the show. This is Andrew Talks to Chefs. I am your host, Andrew Friedman, here with my wife and occasional co-host, Caitlin Friedman. Hi, Caitlin.
Andrew, yes. I'm so excited today.
Why are you so excited?
Because I love your guests.
I know. David DeBerry is one of the things that's improved our quality of life as reluctant suburbanites.
Everything about his restaurants just makes me happy.
They make you happy. Well, he's about to become twice the mogul he already is. He's about to go from two restaurants to four.
It's not, it's everything about his restaurants just put it, it really, really makes me feel comfortable and happy. And the cocktails are great and the food's excellent.
Okay, so we're going to talk about all that in one second. For people who become confused by these intros, I have a serious backlog of episodes. Certain episodes are timed to certain dates. This one is timed to the beginning of Hudson Valley Restaurant Week, which kicked off 2 days ago. And I've been saying in some of the intros that I have already recorded, because I selfishly thought they could be posted faster than the engineers could do it at Heritage. This was a bad assumption on my part. So recently, you've heard me allude in the Naomi Pomeroy and Pano Keratosis show to the fact that I was dropping in, episodes at a crazy rate. That hasn't been true. And then in a couple of weeks, you're going to hear me talking in the intro to the Miles Thompson episode, which I've already recorded, as if that's like in a flurry of episodes that are dropping. Not true. Bad assumption on my part. And Caitlin is back in the middle of all this because this show had a drop dead date. We needed to get this posted this week. So I was glad to get you back on here.
I know, because I'm leaving again next week, yeah. So this is good timing.
So for people, just to orient everybody, shows will be dropping twice a week from now till the end of the year to accommodate episodes that I have already banked and episodes I've already committed to. And they will drop on the regular day of Wednesday, and they will most likely drop Saturday, which could mean late Friday night or in the wee hours of Saturday morning. That is when they will come. So if you want to know when to check your feed, that is when to check your feed through the end of the year. So David DeBerry, first of all, I want to say, because it was part of the occasion of this interview, David is one of the about 200 chefs who are participating in Hudson Valley Restaurant Week. The restaurants that participate offer 3-course lunch menus if they do the lunch for $22.95. They're not all open for lunch. They don't all offer lunch. And if they do the dinner offering, it is 3 courses for $32.95. And toward the end of this episode, Dave talks about why he really likes this promotion. I think it's great. If you want to know more about it, you can go to valleytable.com/HVRW. That's valleytable.com/HVRW. I was at their kickoff event for participating chefs and whatnot further upstate than we are a couple of weeks ago. And I had a blast. I was signing books. I met all these chefs of the Hudson Valley and all these purveyors. And everybody, it made me want to move about an hour north of where we actually are. I know, you're freaking out.
What are you talking about?
Well, because suburbs are like in between the city and like the, you know.
You want to move to the country?
It's not quite country.
Yeah.
But it's very much, I guess it's upstate. It's real upstate. We're just in Westchester County. This is truly, was truly upstate and it was awesome. So anyway, that's what's going on. I'd encourage anyone who is within the Hudson Valley or even if you're in New York and you want to pop out of town for some dinner or take a day trip and go get some lunch. It's a great promotion. Dave DeBerry has the two restaurants I mentioned. He is from upstate New York. He trained in New York City. He trained under Mario Batali. Obviously, these days, that's a loaded name to mention. But back in the day, he trained at Babbo. And he talks about this in the interview. He was there at a time when a lot of people who have gone on to great success, including our friend and neighbor Jonathan Benno and some other people were there. It was one of those kind of moments in time where it was like what people call an all-star kitchen team. David was there during that time. And then he cooked for the great David Boulay at Danube Restaurant, which was David's Austrian restaurant. Pretty impressive. But Dave is very much a creature of the river towns, doesn't want to be in the city. He's up here, and he has these restaurants. The Parlor, which is sort of a, I mean, they're both Italian restaurants. The Parlor has a real focus on pizza. That's the centerpiece of what they do. And the Cookery is a more traditional menu of Italian food. There is a nice, healthy section of pastas on the menu, but also starters and a lot of proteins. As you said before, great cocktail programs at both places. And Dave is on the verge of opening another restaurant in Dobbs Ferry and a restaurant in Port Chester, New York. So he is headed toward moguldom up here in the River Towns. I can't think of offhand of anyone who has that many restaurants. And he is quite uniquely, I think, it's not always the case, especially these days, he is both a chef and owner-operator. His restaurants, front and back of the house, represent his sensibility, which is why I think there's such a, you know, they gel so well. The whole experience, the look, the feel, the vibe, the music, the food, the staff.
The playlist at the Cookery is always rock solid.
Yeah.
I'm just laughing because I just remembered how we got from the Parlor to the Cookery.
What was that? And so then we're going to go to the interview.
We used to always go to the Parlor because we love pizza and we love the cocktails.
And we have kids.
And we have kids. We loved the meatball pizza.
Yeah.
And we complimented the server at the time on how great those meatballs were. And she said, you know, they serve these at the Cookery.
As a standalone, right.
You should go check it out.
Right. So we actually
went to the bar at the Cookery to just try out the meatballs.
Yes.
And like, we fell in love.
Yeah. Yeah. The first time we ever visited this town to check it out, to see if we wanted to move here, friends of ours who also have a kid brought us there for lunch because it seemed an obvious thing to do. It was like you could get a nice cocktail, but there was pizza for the kids. It's not a kid restaurant or a family restaurant, right. Although I'm sure they must do a sizable early seating because of the pizza thing. But they have a bar and, you know, it's a full service restaurant. The Cookery is even more so an adult rock and roll vibe restaurant. So, okay. Well, having said all that, I think that's it. I don't think I need to say anything else. What do you think?
I think we're good.
Okay. So with that, I'm going to turn it over to my interview with David DeBerry, recorded on a wonderful fall morning. It was just the two of us seated at a table in the window of the Cookery, which we usually see in the evening. He does large format dinners there. He does a suckling pig. You know, you can make arrangements for that. And I've never sat at that table because we've never done that. We need to do that.
Yeah, why don't we do that?
Anyway, it was just me and Dave. He very kindly brought some pastries from a local bakery and made some coffee. And we were there at 10 a.m. And here you go. So we're here on a fall morning. I don't love that I moved to the burbs, but sitting here in your dining room at the window with this box of baked goods that you bought and this coffee that you just put on and you're here in your straw hat. I mean, it feels nice. I feel like I'm like halfway to the, I kind of am halfway to the country.
Yeah, dude. There's nothing better than the river towns in the fall.
It's
the leaves.
Yeah.
It's a great time to cook. I'll tell you that. It's a great time.
Is this your favorite season?
I think this is my favorite season. It's time to really put the sweater on and get warm and dig deeper. Bigger beers, bigger meats, bigger stews. We love that stuff.
Yeah. I mean, this is also, we're sitting here about 10 a.m. The kitchen's just getting fired up. But this is also like, the time of year when a place can fill up with the smells of whatever you're cooking.
Yes, indeed.
In a way that doesn't happen when you're just throwing something on a grill for a minute on each side in the summer, or serving things raw.
No, it's true. It's coming from everywhere. You got the basement downstairs. The smell of things are coming from up there.
Yeah,
and it's perfect time of year for this. Yeah.
So you are a creature of outside the city. You've spent time in the. You did your time in the city.
Yeah,
but you were not from the city.
No.
So where'd you grow up?
A little town called Verplank.
Have you heard of
it? It's by Montrose, Peekskill, Buchanan.
Okay.
Home to Indian Point for the most part.
Okay.
Yeah. It's kind of a little weird little town.
Yeah. How's it weird?
Small. Maybe like, most of the businesses are delis and bars. And
is that right?
Yeah. It's kind of like on the river, but doesn't have the train tracks going through it. So it's sort of...
Got it.
Yeah.
But if it was the Wild West, it could have been a ghost town at some point, maybe.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And it's completely beautiful. A lot of Italian, Irish, old school.
So is it like a working class town, or is it like one of those hippie towns that time forgot that you find up there?
You nailed it, actually, perfect. In fact, the funny part is that
both?
It's both, but the town that time forgot is something that I remember my first chef, actually, that I worked for at this restaurant. He was actually the first Syria chef, and we were working down the street, and I remember him telling him I was from Verplank. And he goes, "Oh yeah, the town that time forgot."
Oh really?
So, yeah, it sticks with me.
That's
why
you smiled when I said that.
Exactly.
I mean, the way you were talking about it, that's what came to my head. Yeah.
Yeah, it's a quirky little town, but it started my career. So I will say it was my first dishwashing job at this local Italian restaurant that was like right up the street.
What was it called?
The Paradise.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, the Paradise. Fantastic. I can still have the smells and everything in my nose.
I'm picturing a neon sign in the window.
Neon sign. I think it might have been a light box, but that's fine.
Okay. Yeah.
The grandparents or the owners were friends with my grandmother and my family, and I got the opportunity to start washing dishes, and I think that just started my career.
How old?
I was like 13.
Yeah.
Just to get a couple bucks in my pocket and do something. I was always kind of like needed to do something. I guess that's why I'm in the restaurant business.
I apologize to you because it's come up on some recent shows, but the dishwashing thing is such a, I mean, that's got to be the main point of entry, at least in this country, of cooks.
Yeah.
Still.
It should be.
It should be.
It should be.
Why?
Because I think it's hard work.
Yeah.
It's the dirtiest job around.
Yeah.
And if you can get through that, then you can get through anything, And I feel like the dishwasher should get most of the respect that goes on in a restaurant because of their efforts in keeping us clean and sanitary and putting up with the hostile and ever like just bustling environment.
Yeah.
And they do things that a lot of people don't want to do.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it makes for a stronger work ethic as you grow. Yeah, for sure.
So you, I mean, DeBerry, I'm assuming this is an Italian-American situation. Both sides?
Both sides, Calabrese and Barese.
Okay.
Yeah.
What does that mean?
My mother from Calabria, my father from Bari.
No, I get that. But like, are there any particular associations? Food-wise, culturally, did you discern a difference between the two?
Not so much. They're kind of in the general area. Yeah. So, yeah.
Oh, you know who else has had family from Bari? Was Buddy Valastro.
Buddy Valastro.
The cake boss.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Yeah, I could see that.
Yes, he does. 100%. I'm positive of it.
Yeah.
So tell me, but before you found the kitchen professionally, did you grow up with like some of the typical trappings of an Italian-American... Like, did you have Sunday dinner? Did you have all that stuff?
We did. Most of my experiences actually were times spent off from school, whether I was playing hooky or being sick or whatever, or just sort of, whatever it might have been, reason me staying home. It was spending time with my grandmother because I couldn't just stay home, even if I was faking being sick, right? Like, I had to do something.
You were that restless.
Yeah. Well, she would make me do something. Mm-hmm. So basically, either I was polishing some chairs in the kitchen, or we were in the garden, sort of weeding, picking the tomatoes, picking the beans, and
you
then
liked all that stuff.
I found that sensory, that remembering those things, being under the grapevine, cleaning peas with my grandmother and her sister on days off. Those smells and those things that were happening around that time is what sort of molded the food that I do here at the cookery.
That was your hardwiring.
Yeah, yeah. Because I spent a lot of time working in great restaurants with great chefs and learning and trying to push the limits and trying to figure out what it is that that I wanted to create with food and use all this knowledge. And you need it, and it's great, and it's fantastic. But when I opened this place, I realized the best things I could ever do were just keep it as simple as I remember it. Mm-hmm. And it didn't need to be anything but that. And right. Yeah, we get creative. We as creative as we can be, but it still has to have that like simple soul that anyone can come and eat and feel good about at any time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I think that's really important.
100%.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm sure I'll probably have said this in the intro, but as you know, when we first moved here,
yeah,
my wife and I spent a lot of time at the parlor and some time here, and then we kind of burnt out, to be honest.
Yeah.
And then we started coming again, and we've been in like once a week, I think, for the last six weeks or so. By the way, I have to say, you brought these pastries in, so people hear me chewing for the next couple of minutes. I apologize, but they're too good. So what was your first cooking gig? Did you have cooking jobs upstate before you?
I did. After my dishwashing stint, I started at a local place called Crystal Bay, which was in Peekskill. And I soon became the oyster bitch, I used to like to call myself. I learned to open oysters really fast. You know, it was in one of those outside bars that also can transition into like a salad bar and an omelet bar for brunch and a very large banquet sort of space.
Was this a waterside place?
No. It was a waterside place.
It was?
Yeah.
Okay.
It was actually right next to, right across from White Plains Linen right next to the incinerator. It was kind of a weird place, but it was on the water and it was beautiful. It was my intro into the hectic sort of dark life of a cook and a chef, and I really lashed touch on it really quick.
What drew you to it?
The pace, mm-hmm. the excitement, the creativity, being pushed and mm-hmm. yelled at and made to work faster and harder and think on a different level and have a criminal amount of fun. I mean, it was just amazing.
Like, I've seen that word I think it's even on your website.
Yeah. It actually kind of like paved the path that I think I'm in right now. Well, I try to get a little bit more responsible and take care of business on a bigger level. It's just about having fun. Like if I'm not having fun, like what's the point?
Well, it's funny. This place has a vibe. Maybe you can make sense of what I'm about to say. I'm just going to ramble for a second.
Yeah.
This place has a vibe that I associate with not a lot of restaurants in New York, although in some ways elements of it remind me of my friend Jimmy Bradley's place, The Red Cat.
Yeah.
The bar in particular. I mean, I'm looking at the bar. The cocktails are listed mm-hmm. with little drawings, chalk drawings.
Yeah.
You know, Eat a Peach is a cocktail. It has a peach mm-hmm. drawing. All the names are in different colors.
Mm-hmm.
It's not an open kitchen, but there's a rectangular window right off the dining room. You can see and hear the action back there.
It's like a peep show.
Yeah, it's great. You play rock music here, and sometimes you play it loud.
Sometimes we do play it loud. Again, I think that I think any place, and probably one of the reasons I own my own restaurant is, and I hate to sound, you know, I hope this doesn't sound like, you know, egotistical. Yeah, it's got to be based around my feelings and where I come from and how I feel, and I think every bit of that should transition into your concept and your food and everything else. And that's just what I do. And
I agree.
I don't think it, you know, I think if you were a straight up businessman and you looked at the bottom line and that's all you looked at, you might sit back and say, well, you should do all these little things to make it perfect.
Yeah.
And I kind of, just not me. And I want to walk in here and I want to feel the energy because that's how I give the energy.
Yes.
And I think it's really important to
100%. Yeah. I mean, this is to me, I think there are different ways of doing what you just said. I think there can be places where the chef has a real kind of vision for the food mm-hmm. and there's an owner, operator, front of house partner.
Right.
And they gel.
Yeah.
You know, and it makes sense together. They get each other.
Yeah.
And there's like a symbiotic back and forth kind of thing, right?
Which is hugely important.
Or there can be somebody like you who kind of is the whole package and you know what you want in the front of the house and you just have an instinct probably for that part of it.
Mm-hmm.
But what I was going to say is this in many ways has, I mean, I'm even looking, there's like a ceramic rooster on the, I think that's a rooster, on the bookshelf. There's some, you know, knickknacks and bric-a-brac and what is that, a boar's head? What is that over the kitchen?
These are probably all little things that, you know, me and my wife going through Hudson, New York and going to Andrew's and stuff. This belongs here and for this reason.
So that this kind of like personality, this kind of thrown together but not really thrown together kind of thing.
Yeah.
It reminds me of like places I've been like in like along the beaches in Rhode Island. You know,
it's funny. Yeah,
it reminds me of places. Does that make sense?
Yeah,
when
totally.
It reminds me of like, you know, places you see in the kind of town where you grew up.
Mm-hmm.
Not so much what you would see in one of the bigger cities.
Yeah.
Although the food is at that level, like that's the trick. I feel like you pull off at these
places.
That's
awesome. Thank you. Yeah.
Right. But does that make sense? What I'm saying?
Yeah. 100%.
Is that a deliberate thing? Are you trying to?
I'm just trying to be me.
You're just trying to do
I'm just trying to be, and that's exactly who mm-hmm. I am, and I don't, you know, there's very little pretense to anything that we do.
Yeah.
It's just, this is how I feel today, and this is what we're going to do, and
great.
It works for me, and it works for my staff, and it works for the people around me, and, you know, and that's, you know, another important thing that...
I have to say, for the sort of restlessness and intensity and all this stuff you were describing about your childhood, this is the first time we've really sat and talked. It's also not during service.
Yeah.
But I'm sitting here looking. You have a tranquility about you. Is that something that came with age? Is that just how you are before you have your coffee?
No, I've always been this sort of sedate.
This is how you are, like off the.
Yeah. I will go on the record as saying that I internalize all of the stress that I go through. My wife probably sees it more than anyone else, but sitting here, you know, I enjoy this. This is comfortable.
This is comfortable. Nice. This is it.
I would like to go through the rest of my life just like this, although it's not really sustainable.
No, trust me.
Yeah. So I try to fix it every night when I go home. Yeah.
All right. So tell me how you went about pursuing becoming a chef.
You know, I think I was back at that. I was being that oyster bitch, and I was, you know, in comes this new chef and to the restaurant. You know, this is all things that everyone experiences in the restaurant. You know, but I had no idea what was going on. I just see this this guy come in, and he was his name is Michael Lombardi, by the way, and he actually owns a new diner that. They opened up in Ossining, actually. I think it's called Didi's. But, you know, I saw his passion for building a salad. I remember that you don't make a salad, you build a salad. You know, it was this amazing thing I've never seen before.
Yes.
And it was very modest at that time. It
yes.
Was, and I just got into the creativity. Now let's take the creativity and match it with this criminal amount of fun and sort of, I was almost cooler than anyone in high school because I hung out with older people. I did the drugs. I drank the alcohol. I had the fun with them. I did different things that were like sort of mature, I think.
Yeah, you were
not.
Just hanging out with like the seniors. You were hanging out with like the young adults
from all over the place, different ethnicities and whatnot. And it felt special. And I immediately knew that, you know, oh my God, I could be creative. I could make money and keep myself busy all the time and I love food, so why not?
Mm-hmm.
And food speaks to you. It's a moment. It's not just putting something in your mouth for either nourishment or whatever. It makes you feel good, and there's nothing wrong with that. We all love things that make us feel good.
Yeah.
So I remember one chef saying, "Hey, you should think about going to the Culinary Institute of America. You know, I graduated from there, and I make $75,000 a year, and I cook."
This was Lombardi who told you that?
This was the previous chef,
that
he replaced. But anyway, and I was like, oh, really?
He was making $75,000 a year?
Yeah.
Up there?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, my God.
So I was like, wow, this is amazing. You know, now I'm like 15, 16 maybe. I mean, it wasn't... I think I knew I was going to culinary school at 15. I had papers signed. I was ready to go. I didn't even think twice about anything else.
Yeah.
And sure enough, I was in CIA, like, you know, as soon as I graduated.
Glad you did it?
I'm so glad I did it. I'm so glad. It was really fun working in that atmosphere before you go to school, because you've heard all the terms and you've seen the techniques and you've been in it, and then you get to school and they sort of like build on that, you know, and then you're like, oh my God, like there's all this stuff that I didn't know. And it probably cut down, I would say, about 5 years of experience being in a restaurant. And I think that was important to me because I always like to move fast.
Can we just back up for one second?
Yeah.
You know, you just mentioned like the drugs and the criminal amount of fun and all this, right? This is something that I feel like is very fascinating about the business. It's something that I think still draws people to the business, if we're honest. We're also now at a time where people are examining that part of the business, where a lot of people are very publicly going into recovery. When you talk about that time in your life, and when you hear people talking about the things I'm talking about, how do you respond to that?
I respond to it like I would respond to anyone. I mean, it's hard to be an advocate for that because you understand the health issues. But I don't want to go around promoting it, and it's easier for me because I don't necessarily have an addictive personality. So I had a lot of fun with it. I never took it further than, you know, smoking weed at you know, 16.
By the way, I hope I'm not trying to be like invasive with.
Not at all. Not at all. I would be upfront and honest, but I just I don't know. I think that I just don't want to talk about it and promote it. You know what I mean?
But you also don't want to be dishonest about.
I would never be dishonest. You can't be. Exactly. And it still is for the most part. So, but again, I don't take it to the next level.
I think that's fair.
Yeah.
I mean, I do. I think it's, I do think it is. I mean, I don't know. I may get flack for this. It is still something that I think a lot of people, if they're honest, are drawn to that part of the industry. You know, you go to a festival or you go to a, you know, anything where people are on the road.
Yeah.
The nights go long.
Yes.
You know, they still do in 2018. And some people can handle that and keep it in moderation. Some people can't and probably shouldn't.
Yeah.
To each their own, I guess.
Yes, exactly.
It is a fun thing
to be
around.
It's so much fun. It really is. It really is. And there's nothing like after a 12-hour day in the kitchen and dealing with restaurant stuff or whatever to sit back and have a couple pints and rip a ball hit.
You know, I think a lot of people think, oh, you know, people are drawn to this element of the business, right? But I think what a lot of people don't get is what you just said, that much like it is for entertainers or, you know, performers of any kind, to come down from the high of a service, from the adrenaline rush, from being, you know, connected to this organism of however many people, where you're going for like 6 hours, maybe more, maybe you don't even leave to use the bathroom, and it's like a Saturday night where you're doing like hundreds of covers and like you barely have time to think. Most chefs and cooks will tell you, it's very hard to go from that to like, honey, I'm home. You know, like
it's so difficult.
You need to somehow decompress, and that is why a lot of people drink as much as they do or have a smoke or whatever after work. It's because they don't know how to naturally take it down.
I guess we could meditate.
Yeah,
we could try.
Right, but does that? I think a lot of civilians don't understand that.
Yeah,
you know. I mean, I had a night maybe 5 years ago, and as much time as I spent around people who do what you do for a living, I'd never seen this. I spontaneously ended up with 4 or 5 pretty well-known chefs after a benefit.
Yeah.
And two of the people who came had just come from their restaurants, actually. And they were just going bar to bar in the East Village. One beer at each bar.
Yep.
And then go to the next bar. And they were like, one of them was like hammering the table and literally like howling. Howling. I had never seen that. Like that intense release, you know? Yeah. And this went on for like 2.5 hours.
You need to do it.
It was a revelation to me.
Yeah.
But I do understand it. But I don't think it's just, I think people who are like, oh, it's just it's not just a party thing. I think they don't understand.
We need a little time to come down.
Yeah. And you're also getting off work at like an hour. What else are you going to do?
Exactly. Yeah.
Honestly. Anyway.
I think
I just wanted to take, I just think it's an interesting topic.
It is. And again, I think I've taken it from, you know, in my 20s working this in the city, it was every night.
Yeah.
It was every night.
Then, yeah, right.
And then it stopped for a while.
Yeah.
And then in my 30s, after I opened this place, I came, like mid-30s, I was like back to it again. I was working this. It was successful. I was just running it every day. And then I'd run to the bar after service. Then it'd be darts till 3 a.m. And it was great. And now I'm like, I got so much shit going on that I'm happy with.
Yeah.
All right, I'm going to walk through the door. I'm going to fucking pop a can.
Yeah.
I'm going to take a ball hit. I'm going to sit on my deck. And that's good enough right
now. Yes, right. Yeah, I get it.
Because then now there's just way too much responsibility.
Right. You need yourself in the morning.
I do need myself. I need myself for myself and for everyone else. So.
Okay. Yeah. So you go to the CIA. You love being in the CIA.
Yeah.
And then do you go from there to the city?
Yeah, directly. I went to Windows on the World. I did my extern there.
Who were you working for there?
Michael Amonico.
Oh, there was a great.
Yeah, he's one of the nicest guys ever. Yeah. I still remember. I might have told you this before in passing, but like he signed my extern book. You know, David should not be allowed to graduate unless he promises to come work for me for at least a year. Blah blah. It was. Yeah. I cried a little bit. You know, I cry easy anyway. But and it was a special moment for me. He's a really sweet sweet person.
I love Michael.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
He had a late start too, right?
He was career. Trying to be an actor before that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Worked for a year after my extern with him and went immediately to Babbo.
Okay.
Yeah.
What year was roughly?
Jeez, shit. 1999, I think.
Wow.
Yeah, yeah.
Was that like one of these all-star teams in the kitchen kind of deals?
Oh, my God. It was the. It was the Liz Benno. It was the Mark Lattner.
Yeah.
Patty Neusser, Andy Neusser.
I just saw Patty yesterday.
I mean, it was probably one of the most special times of my restaurant career working. And I think...
Was Gina De Palma doing pastries
Gina De Palma
then?
Was doing...
The late Gina De Palma.
Horrible. But she was one of the most amazing pastry chefs I remember. And due to her simplicity and focus on just easy, delicious, well-executed desserts.
Yeah.
Which was pretty much all of Babbo in general.
Yeah.
Which was just, it really paved the way for what I do here a lot of. You know?
Yeah. Well, I would think also to see what, I mean, because that, first of all, talk about turning the music up.
Yeah.
I mean, you know.
He
would come in late and like crank it. Yeah.
And it was always, from what I remember, it was always like one album that he played the whole way through.
Oh, that I wasn't there enough to know that. But but the food there was food that, you know, was very, the word I like to use is relatable. It was very relatable Italian food. It wasn't tortured as some people were doing at the time. But in this box, that was not that they had a dress code, but that was a little bit of a dressier or fancier setting than this is.
Right.
But I could see how that would be an amazing early gig for you in terms of seeing the possibilities of what you wanted to explore.
Because it was simple, soulful, delicious food, and then the kick was okay. Well, we have no problem drilling tripe and lamb's tongue and all that stuff, and that was like wow. I mean, it's a whole new level of what we can do with simple food as opposed to just, you know, sort of manipulating it.
Yeah.
You know, because soon after I went to Danube, and I remember it was
that was a David Boulay project.
Yeah, I mean, the Austrian, French, and what a wonderful, beautiful experience and place. But, you know, I remember...
What position were you there?
I was just, I was working Garmager, then I was the schnitzel, and then I became the schnitzel bitch, right? So I always find myself in these bitch situations.
I'm assuming that was your term and not Mr. Boulay's.
Who was the chef there? That was Mario Lagner.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Young Austrian guy, very talented. But I remember, you know, coming from like Babbo, you know, you're sitting there assembling this friggin' beet terrine with fromage blanc and whatnot, and it's taken hours, and the fucking thing, like, you can't use it the next day because the beets are bleeding through the cream, and God forbid it's fucking tainted whatsoever with the white is tainted with the pink, right?
Right.
And, you know, I'm or making checkerboards with like a hamachi and tuna on a plate. And again, extremely beautiful. And I'm like, but I could have just whipped up a beautiful gnocchi with oxtail ragu and it would have satisfied me on a whole different fucking level. You know, and I'm like, why am I doing this?
You know?
But you do it for the experience and you do it to learn and build your value and your
And is it not also true, like I've had this conversation with people about management styles, but yeah. I think the same is true about culinary styles, right? Mm-hmm. What learning what you really don't like is can yeah. often be as powerful as understanding what you do like.
Yeah.
In no, terms of true. Defining yourself.
It's true. And then every once in a while you can pull that fucking thing out and like, you know, do something
impress
fun with somebody.
Yeah,
exactly.
But did you never, I was going to ask this question actually a minute ago, you know, you'd go to the CIA, which when you were there was largely yeah. French, I mean, it still yeah. is largely, but it's a little more international stuff going on now.
Yeah.
You know, you take a job at a place like the NU. Was there ever a moment where you thought you might go over to the, you know, the dark side, where you might go into the sort of French formal? Did that ever appeal to you? Was there ever a moment as you were like when you're in school and you're developing what Tony Bourdain used to call moves,
yeah,
you know,
yeah, yeah.
and you're learning how to plate stuff that looks really hot, you yeah. know, because a lot of young cooks get swept up with that
yeah.
element of it, right?
Mm-hmm.
Did you ever have a moment of temptation where you thought, I want to be that?
No.
Okay.
But I will tell you this. I do now.
Really?
You know what I think? I think...
Because you lit up when I started asking this question.
Yeah, because
something was
I feel
going
like,
on.
I feel like we're forgetting about the things that make the most sense when cooking.
What do you mean?
Well, I feel like there's so much out there and there's so much creativity and so many different things that people are doing and nothing is really revolutionary anymore. There's only a few revolutionary
right.
things, right?
Yeah.
Like Fran Adria, whatever, like that
yeah.
was revolutionary. That changed things. That was me saying I do not have the patience
right.
to do molecular gastronomy, but God damn it. Like he's done something so amazing and I can pull little things from it to, you know, but, and then back when I was at Danube, like, and I said, yeah. I'd rather just be cooking Babo food. Right. Mm. But now I'm like, I want to wrap fish in buttery, flaky pastry dough and serve it with fucking beurre blanc and maybe some caviar because
straight up
straight
classic,
up, because it's delicious. Like
yeah.
it's fucking delicious. It makes sense. All the things we were taught at school, all the scoffiers, all the
yeah.
shit. It was. It's beautiful. It really is. And I'm. You know, we're opening a British gastropub soon.
Mm-hmm.
In right here in Dobbs. And
is there a name yet?
Yeah,
that you can say.
It's called the Rare Bit.
Oh, that's great.
Thank you. Yeah.
That's such a great name.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it. We spent months, I think, between me and my partner. We want to kill each other and everyone trying to get into this thing. And we've went through a bunch of them.
Oh,
but
my gosh.
I think my wife really, she came up with it.
That's one of those names, like
yeah.
when you hear a book title and you're like, I can't believe no one, like, that's a great name.
Oh,
that's
no,
perfect.
Thank you. But, you know, we went to London and the food is modest. It's nothing special. In fact, it was like, all right, it's meat and potatoes. I get it. But it was those pie crusts. It was the meat and the pastry and
right.
that we're focusing a lot of that. And I think that's beautiful work. You know, it's like charcuterie. It's like a lost art type thing. And,
mm-hmm.
and I just want to get back into that. I might want to, I don't know, bring linen back to a table. Like, why not?
Really?
Like, fuck it. Like, let's have fun. It means something. You know what I mean? It doesn't.
But let me ask you something. If you were to put linen on the table in one of your places, would you insist that people dress a different way?
No.
So it would be there.
The
it would be there almost like a, I don't want to say theme because that's a horrible word.
Yeah.
But it would be there to enjoy as you are.
Yeah,
as
exactly.
A guest.
At the end of the day, our whole motto is eat serious, have fun, right? So I don't need you to. You come in flip flops for all I fucking care. If you
yeah.
sit at a linen table,
100%,
just.
Yeah.
This is how we.
Is it the setting?
Yeah, it's the setting.
Yeah.
It's,
this
but,
is the
but
vibe.
But come in how you want.
Right.
Exactly. You shouldn't feel any different. You shouldn't feel afraid or you shouldn't. You just be who you are, but enjoy it for what it is. That's
yeah.
it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm really into like. The CIA. I love the CIA. I love what they've done.
Look at you. You're like
yeah.
totally
I'm
animated
out on
as you
yeah,
talk
yeah.
about this.
Yeah.
Well, it's funny. You know, years ago, and I still feel this way, but I think a lot of people are having this craving you're talking about as yeah. diner. I mean, what's the hottest restaurant in the city right now? Probably Frenchette.
Frenchette, yep. I haven't. You know? I'm going. I was supposed to go this weekend. I don't know, but Le Coucou.
Yeah, like, Le Coucou
yeah,
was
yeah.
probably right before that
yeah,
was like
yeah.
that. I remember back in the 90s, I think, there was a place called Café de Bruxelles on
mm-hmm.
Greenwich Avenue in
yeah.
the city. And right near where Benny's Burritos is.
Yeah.
And I used to once in a while go there and just get like cassoulet or, you know, I remember they used to do this tomato that they had like peeled,
hollowed it out, sliced it, reassembled it, put goat cheese and basil in the middle, like layered, and then that was like an app.
And it was delicious.
And it was delicious. And I remember having conversations. This is right when I was getting turned on to food, and and there was a lot of exciting stuff going on in the city.
Yeah.
I was like, but you know, like every 2 months, every 6 weeks, I want to go eat that.
Yeah.
I mean, there is something.
It's like a good French onion soup.
There's something so. I don't know what it is about classic French cuisine, but there's something that's so logical and primal.
Exactly.
Right.
And warm. And yeah. And rich.
And perfect.
Luxurious.
And perfect.
I love the word luxurious these days.
And it's also perfect. There's something about it that seems to just, I mean, it's going to sound like overly sentimental, but it almost seems to just flow naturally from like who we are. And, you know, it's like those things were created by poets, you know what I mean? Not cooks.
But that's the greatest part about being a chef or an artist or anything. You sort of evolve and you change and you, you get to do those. You get to bring it back.
Yeah.
You get to do those things. Like a four-leaf clover, shining like a tiny bride, landing on all four feet like a cat who's ready for a wild night. My theme song and break music is from After School Specials album Double Barrel, Single Entendre, which is available on iTunes.
Today's program was brought to you by Le Creuset, the first to pioneer colorful enamel cookware over 90 years ago. They've been a favorite for generations through the meals and memories the cookware creates and the style it expresses. My name is Kat Johnson. I'm the communications director at Heritage Radio Network. When I'm not making food radio, I'm making food, and my favorite cookware is the 8-quart marine blue Dutch oven that never leaves my stovetop. Not only because I use it constantly, but because cabinet space is at a premium in New York City kitchens. My boyfriend and I were gifted our Le Creuset by his family last Christmas, and it was the first piece of enameled cookware we'd ever owned. I'd been fawning over the marine blue color, especially when I realized there were only a few left in stock. When we unwrapped the box, we were pleasantly surprised to see how big this thing was. I immediately started imagining what I could cook. Roast chicken, Texas-style chili, a leg of lamb, or my favorite, a huge batch of Marcella Hazan's bolognese. Head to lecreuset.com/HRN, that's LECREUSET.com/HRN, to see all the new products and amazing holiday gift deals. HRN listeners will get 20% off the new Le Creuset cookbook with the code HRN.
Welcome back to the show. I'm going to get you right back to the rest of my conversation with David DeBerry. How are you enjoying it so far, Caitlin?
I love it. I love everything about his restaurants. I'm not even just saying that. I'm a huge fan.
Okay. And I don't mean anything by this, but I think you just really like Dave. We have rediscovered...
I do really like Dave,
We started going to his restaurants when we first moved here.
Yeah.
No offense to everyone else. And there are other restaurants we do like, but... But, you know, there were very few places that to us, we as people who still identify as New Yorkers felt at home, right?
Exactly.
And so we maxed out on his restaurants when we got here. We were going there all the time. He knows this because I've confessed this. Then we didn't come in forever. And then we started going back recently, and we've been there like once, twice a week at the bar at the cookery.
I know.
And we've gotten to know the whole team.
Like my new best friend forever, Sage.
Sage, who's a cook there, who I know you two just met the other night.
Love her.
It was mutual love at first sight.
Exactly.
John, I don't want to mispronounce your last name. I'm going to call you John P., who used to be at the Pines in Brooklyn. Dom at the bar, who we didn't know from anywhere else. And Godfrey Polistina, who we know from his days with Virgil and some other restaurants in New York City. It's crazy. Old and new friends. We walk in there and it's cheers. It's cheers-like.
It just makes me feel like I'm, it makes me feel like we're back in Chelsea, but we're not back in Chelsea.
Yeah. Okay. So with that, I'm going to now return you to my interview with Chef David DeBerry. I hope you enjoy the rest of it. Are you going to do stuff like this at the Rare Bit? Or you're thinking about another place?
Yeah, no, we've got another place opening up as well, actually.
Yeah.
I'm sort of a sort of stupid and good all the time.
You've gone mogul like overnight.
Yeah. we're doing a high-end diner in Porchester, which is a really fucking fantastic town.
Yeah, we should say that's on the water. Porchester's a waterfront town.
It is indeed. It is home to the Capitol Theater, which is, you know, headlining some of the biggest acts. I mean, I just saw Neil Young there.
Yeah, I saw Elvis Costello there a few months ago.
Great, you know?
It's great. And you can get a drink served at your seat.
Yes.
In the theater.
It's pretty amazing.
Yes.
Yeah, it's like the Alamo.
Yes. It's like the Alamo.
Not really, though.
No.
Yeah, so we're doing a high-end diner over there, which I'm super excited about because it's a really a license to do whatever the fuck we want. And just, you know, it really evokes community and simplicity. But we're going to get kind of nasty and bougie over there as well. And
so are you going to have diner food coexisting with, for lack of a better word, more chefy stuff? Like, will you have stand? Like, can you get an omelet there?
No omelet right now. Okay. But there's definitely egg items. There's definitely pancakes. There's definitely waffles.
Is there corned beef hash?
There is pastrami.
Okay.
There are griddle burgers, and there's going to be sandwiches and lots of other fun stuff. Homemade hot dogs.
But then we also do stuff that's more...
Yeah, you can definitely find caviar on a lot of your items. Yeah. We're going to get there.
You know, I was talking to someone not long ago. This might have been when you were cooking in the city.
Yeah.
There was this little mini trend a million years ago. I associate it with the East Village. There were a couple of places that were basically diners.
Yeah.
But also had like a tasting menu.
Mm-hmm.
That was a thing. There wasn't a lot of it. And then the classic one was really far back. The restaurant still exists. It's gone through a bazillion owners. The Empire Diner.
Yeah. I was there most recently.
22nd and 10th.
Yep.
Back in the late 70s was exactly that. It was a diner by day.
Mm-hmm.
And then at night there was a tasting menu.
Yeah, it's brilliant. It's brilliant. We're going to do large format and all that kind of stuff.
Oh,
are? We're definitely playing to the theater crowd. I mean, we definitely want...
Oh, that's great.
Pre-theater. I remember hearing that back at Windows in the World, right? Yeah. What do they call it? The sunset menu or something like that?
Oh, that's
it was
funny.
Like the,
I don't remember.
You know, we would just get slammed with everyone who was about to go to a show.
Yeah.
You know?
But at Windows, I mean, they had a long way to go to get to the show.
Yeah. It's true.
Yeah.
It's true. But yeah, that's what we're trying to do over there. I think it's going to be fun and exciting. Awesome. I'm very excited about both of them, actually.
That's great. Now, does that have a name?
That one I can't reveal at this present time.
No problem.
Yeah.
And we should also say, in addition to the cookery where we're sitting, you have your other restaurant that you've had for a while is The Parlor.
The Parlor, yeah.
Which is pizza is its main thing, although there's apps and desserts and fun drinks. And
totally. That place became just like a kind of like an onslaught of just my sort of, I hate to say it, but like adolescence as I got, like I opened this place and then I said, I'm going to do another place. I had to do pizza. I was obsessed with Neapolitan pizza. And almost three years after opening here, I wanted to do a truck. Well, let me start by saying I wanted to have a Neapolitan oven in this place, but I couldn't afford it.
In the cookery.
Yeah. And there was no space for it. I didn't even know how to get there. So I scratched that idea. I'm just going to work with what I got right now. And so we started a food truck, and I said, let's just do wood-fired pizza with a food truck, and then it'll be a good start.
Yeah.
And it was a great success. We were, you know, trailing this thing all around Westchester County, farmers markets, festivals, whatever it may be, doing everything we could. And it was a lot of fun, and people were like, you got to have a space. So, you know, I said, all right. We took advantage of a space that was close, and it was small enough to just do Neapolitan pizza. And we made it happen, and then I soon realized that, you know, I love Neapolitan pizza. I love the feel of it. I love the style of it. I love the way it, you know, the flavor, everything. And I love looking at it. More than anything, I love looking at it.
For people who don't know, for whom pizza is pizza, maybe it's thick crust and thin crust, what makes Neapolitan pizza Neapolitan pizza?
Well, there's all the rules, right, that have to go back to the Naples, where you have to use a certain tomato and you have a certain flour and blah, blah, blah. And of course, God forbid I do everything that I'm told that I'm supposed to do because I really don't give a shit. But like who inspired me the most was probably Franny's in Brooklyn, who I don't think they're existing. They were just
there's a wonderful restaurant in space now. But
you know, I remember sitting there and I was like, wow, I don't have to do all this shit that they tell me to do. Like, this is beautiful, just simple ingredients, well done. The dough is delicious. It's salted right. It feels good, and I've never had anything really like that here in the States. So. That's sort of where we went for that style.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think it's just about having a thin crust and a good crisp but just enough chew and really, like, what drives me nuts more than anything is the Levant. It's like it's that relationship between humidity and temperature, making the dough, and the temperature of the oven, and making sure that it has that rise and that sort of hole in the middle of the crust, where you just don't get any of that with American pizza. American pizza is, or New York pizza, whatever it is, it's a crust. And whether you think it's crispy or not, or whatever it is, it's not. It doesn't have that. That like someone really put some love into this all day long type thing.
The intangible.
They fought with it. Yeah. You know, it was their nemesis for a while, and that's where we are with that. And it changes all the time. It does. Mm-hmm. It really is always a living thing that just drives me fucking crazy. But what I realized when I opened the place is that I couldn't just do what people expected of even a Neapolitan pizza. Like I didn't want the appetizer to be fucking burrata or arugula salad or here's your sliced meats. I get it. It's very Italian and people know me for being an Italian chef or whatever, but like I just needed more. I automatically realized that I would just not be happy enough with just making pizza, and I needed to do fun things to start with. And I think that's where we started getting into the Brussels sprouts with the Rice Krispies and the chili honey and, you know, the chicken and waffles in a bowl. And I hate to say it, but I probably was thinking about a lot of how I like to eat when I'm stoned on my couch, which is something out of a bowl.
Okay, so glad you said it, because I don't know if I could bring it up. But, from the first time I started eating at your restaurants, I mean, there are these clues. Like, you have a T-shirt that says legalized marinara.
I read that. There's a story to that, actually. I had a dishwasher came out of my kitchen, and I actually opened up with a shirt that said "Get Baked" right on the back.
I've seen that too.
And I, you know what? I look back at it now and I'm like, that was stupid. Like I thought it was. I'm looking back and I'm like, this is so kitschy. Like, why did I do that? You know? And he comes out of the kitchen and he goes, "Chef," I'm like, "Yo, what's up, dude?" And he's like, "I know you got these shirts that say Get Baked, but have you ever thought about legalized marinara?" And I'm like, "You're a fucking genius, dude." So we just we had those shirts made like immediately.
I love that.
And again, like, it was a big sell. Everyone got everyone's attention and people like to buy the shirts. And just recently, like, "Should we order more shirts?" I'm like, "Nah, fuck it. I'm over it."
Do you have any pushback on that here in the burbs?
No, that place is awesome because it really is. It's a place for everybody, even the kids.
Oh, kids.
In the area.
Oh, yeah. My God. I mean, going there at 5:30. Right, it's family hour. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Right on the walls, you know, what you want to say. Oh, and it's a good expressive place.
I wanted to ask you this, though, because when the first time I went in there, so years ago, I don't know if this exists outside of the Hamptons, but I did a summer share, what's called a summer share, which is you get a bunch of friends, none of whom could afford to rent a place for the summer themselves. Uh-huh. You find an unsuspecting landlord. And like 16 people run a house that should be rented by like 4 people.
Yeah.
And you do shifts, right? Mm-hmm. And the ongoing project we had at that summer share as a gag was the development of a restaurant called Munchies. And Munchies was a restaurant that was going to be run by stoners for stoners, right? And the menu item, this is like 20 years ago, the menu items were, one was walk-cooked pizza. So it was like you take a cooked, fully baked pizza, slice it into squares, throw it in a wok with more cheese and tomato sauce, and then serve it, right? One was a burrito inside a chimichanga shell.
Okay.
Chocolate marshmallow soup available hot or cold.
Yep.
At some point as we were going through this, we had this revelation that most stoner food is based on not being able to make a decision between two things, right?
Yes.
That is what stoner food is.
Yes, it is.
And, and you put a... And this, I love your food, but I had my observation was there has to be marijuana involved in this menu because you put a lot of sweet things in your first courses.
Yeah.
That's the thing you do.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like, at least in the two restaurants.
It's not the best, I think, for you know, drinking wine and pairing with wine and stuff like that and whatnot. But yeah, I like the balance of the sweet and the hot, no matter which. I guess.
Because you do, you'll have fruit in your starters.
Yeah.
Fruit. You'll have syrup.
Yeah.
You'll have sugar. There's that powdered, what is it, the pig's head?
The donut here is the donut with the smoked pig head between it.
But it's like it's a donut that the donut is sugared, right?
It is.
So this is something you do a lot of.
I do, and I don't like to make it so there has to be some direction without it being just a fucking complete stoner moment.
Oh, of
you
course.
Know what I mean? And you don't want to ruin the integrity of what you're trying to accomplish.
Right.
And I think that's the most important thing. That's the balance between, you know,
100%.
Yeah. So,
and no, I didn't mean to suggest otherwise.
Oh, no.
I just meant there was a thread.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh yeah.
I don't see it in your main courses.
No.
Your main courses read much more traditional to me. The pizzas, I don't really see it. You know, it's you have fun in your app. You have fun in the apps.
Well, that's the thing. With pizza, it gets like crazy, right? So like that's where that's the struggle with like where do you go with certain things sometimes? Like, you know, pizza to me is this is the way it should be, and you don't like to overload it. And you know, and that's a good thing with Neapolitan. Like, I'm not a big fan of like, you know, buffalo chicken pizza and whatever else people put on it and whatnot. Yeah. And although a lot of Americans do enjoy it, I like to keep the pizza simple and the apps fun and exciting.
Do you, as you're about to double your number of restaurants, right, from 2 to 4, you used a phrase a few minutes ago. What was it? Eat well, have fun.
Eat serious, have fun.
Eat serious, have fun. Okay. That's great. That makes a lot of sense.
Sure.
Looking at your places. But do you have anything approaching sort of an overall vision for this growing group of restaurants you have? Is there beyond that phrase, is there some cohesive idea that for you ties it all together? Or like, I mean, I'm sitting here with you.
Yeah.
I'm not going to say something like a corporate philosophy or a mission statement or something like that. But is there something as you grow and expand and maybe as you go beyond 4, is there a unifying thing? Or is it just like, I found a great space. There's this idea I've had for a while. I'm just going to do that.
It's not, it's never like an economical sort of like formula for me. It's more, I'm testing myself and pushing myself, but it's bigger than me. It's really about the people who are with me, because I realize that I need to express my creativity in different ways, and sometimes opening another restaurant is that, and I have to feel that. Like, I feel Porchester. I feel Dobbs Ferry. I feel like it's who I am. It's the people. It's the area. It's everything. And I like to operate here, and I like to have different style of restaurants that I can walk to. It's a lifestyle, really. It's all about a lifestyle. Mm-hmm. But opening in Porchester is a feeling I have. I am a huge music fan. I love the Capitol Theater. I love the ethnicity of the area. I feel that this concept can work over there, and I'll feel good about it.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, it's bigger than me too. The test is how do I do it, where it's obviously it can't be me doing everything. So how do I have the people that work for me who are passionate and believe the same creed? How do I give them opportunities? How do they become part of this bigger picture so that we can either continuously keep going and do great things together, or we keep it right here and we just ride it out and have as much fun as we can with it. But it's about building that team. It's about building the people around us to be able to keep going without killing yourself trying to do it.
Well, it's funny. I've met over the last couple of weeks in here. Yeah. Well, first of all, I've reconnected with John in the kitchen here, who used to be at the Pines in the city. Godfrey Polistina works with you.
Yeah, yeah. I really feel
special. I knew a million years ago. I met a cook. I forget her official name. I know she goes by Sage.
Yeah.
You got a great crew here.
They're amazing. They're very talented people who I'm very fortunate to have with me in growing the business.
And you want to keep them.
Yeah, I want to keep them. I want them to be happy. I want them to have good lives. I want us all to eat serious, have fun. I want us to work and enjoy what we do.
But you're also creating a situation where people can keep from feeling stale, right?
Yes.
Like they can move within the organization. There's new opportunities.
Exactly.
If they want to move up, they don't have to leave the group.
Exactly. And this is nothing new. Chefs have been, restaurateurs have been doing this for years. Mario was one of the best at it.
The first person I ever heard of who had this philosophy explicitly for this reason, they say, was Wolfgang Puck.
Yeah.
You know, who kept in the 80s, you know, proliferated like crazy.
Yeah.
But a lot of the people who were with him back then are still there.
That's amazing.
That's actually true. I mean, mostly on the operation side, but a couple of cooks, chefs.
But there's nothing better than walking into your place and sitting down with everyone and saying, look, this is what we want to accomplish this week.
Yeah.
This is the dish we want to work on. And having them all just get in on it because they believe in it. And then that's when it becomes amazing.
Yeah.
It's not just me coming in and making something and saying, here's the recipe, go with it.
I
can't operate like that.
I love it. So before we stop, you are part of, along with about 200 restaurants, Hudson Valley Restaurant Week.
Oh yeah, it's a special time for us.
Is it?
Say, yeah,
what do
yeah,
you do?
Yeah.
So this is like a lot of cities, a lot of big cities now have these restaurant weeks, and this is very similar. It's what for a period of time.
Yeah, it's like really almost 2 weeks.
Yeah,
we always joke about
correct.
That every
yeah,
week.
None of restaurant those. None, no restaurant weeks are just a week
but
anymore.
I think it's a special time. I think that it's great promotion. We do probably like 25% more business.
Is that right?
Yeah, yeah. People for some they whether they're seeing all the ads or whatever it may be, is the price. I don't know. I don't really care because our like it feels good and the energy is good. And it feels good to serve different people. I don't care where they're fucking coming
well, a
from.
Lot,
you know what I mean?
A lot of these type of weeks do, people have said this forever in New York City, their version of it, they do draw customers who do not normally go out to like quote unquote nicer restaurants.
Right. But you know, and people, you know, there's much more to this business, as you know, than a bottom line, right?
Right.
And a lot of people say, oh, well, it's a bunch of people who are never going to come back again. You know, they just come off restaurant. Like, bullshit, dude. You have a stage.
Yeah.
Like, do it. Now's your time to like show everyone, because whether they come back or not, they're going to go tell somebody else about their experience. And they may like food all the time and go out. And you know, so to me, it's just exciting. It's more energy. It's more stuff for us to do.
Yeah.
We don't decrease the menu that much at all. In fact, sometimes you just load up the special board with a bunch of other shit that I've been looking to do. Like, you know, last year we ran braised coxcombs for restaurant week. Yeah. And you know what? It's a great time for you to put something out, and people to bite on it if they normally wouldn't.
Right.
Because it's not hurting their pockets that much.
Right.
Yeah. I'll try coxcombs today. I might try lamb's tongue today because, you know, I'm not really paying full price for it. And to me, it means more. If they leave being happy and experience something new,
that
goes very far.
Yeah.
Yeah. So anyway, great. I love Restaurant Week.
That's great. That's awesome.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, it was great to finally sit down and talk a little.
Yeah, so much fun, man. Thank you.
And thank you. As you know, I have nothing against the suburbs. I'm here for several years to go. But my wife and I are what I would describe as reluctant suburbanites. And you are one of the things that I think has elevated our happiness.
Wow, that means
being
a lot.
Out here. Yeah. So thank you for that.
Cool. Thank you. Okay. I appreciate that. All right, man.
And that's our show. I want to thank David DeBerry for making some time for us. I want to remind any listeners that are within a stone's throw of the Hudson Valley that it is Hudson Valley Restaurant Week through November 11th. It's more than a week. So it started 2 days ago, but it goes till the 11th. So still plenty of time to get there. Also, I need to say boo, because it occurred to me this show's dropping on Halloween.
That just makes me think we got to go get some candy.
We do have to buy candy. Oh, it's going to be so sad. The shelves will be picked over. Also, as a nod to those people who have commented that I self-promote too much, I've saved this to the end of the show. If you would like to follow us and stay in touch with what's going on with this podcast, you can subscribe for free on Stitcher and iTunes or wherever you get your podcast. And if you want to follow us on social media, the best place to do that by far is on Instagram. The account there is @chefpodcast. That is @chefpodcast. And you can follow me personally at Toqueland Andrew, TOQUELAND Andrew. Thanks to Vitor and Matt, the engineers at Heritage Radio Network. Thank you to Kat for helping coordinate this crazy time with me selfishly dropping 2 episodes a week. Thanks to all of you out there in podcast land for listening, and we'll see you back here in just a few days on Andrew Talks to Chefs.